Today's Issues continues on AFR with your host, Tim Wildman, President of the American Family Association.
Hey, there's no threat to the popcorn chain in this country that you know of, is there, Ed?
Well, there's not at AFA, I could tell you that.
You see that big bag we just got delivered out there?
Yes. Ron Cook, who takes care, I mentioned Ron's name on the air one day this week because he's become so important to me. But he does radio work too, but he keeps the coffee and the popcorn made. And he, of course, gets us the supplies, keeps the snack machine filled. Yeah. And he's got like a 100-pound bag of popcorn out there.
I know. Was it yesterday we had he wasn't here? In the,
2 days ago.
The popcorn
Tuesday.
Machine was.
It was dark.
It was dark.
Yes.
It was depressing.
I walked from my office.
It was noticeable
on the
faces of the staff.
My disposable plastic gloves, whenever we touch anything, we're supposed to do that, Coke machine, whatever. Put those on to go to the popcorn, go around the corner of the popcorn machine.
Yeah.
It was dark.
Yeah.
Total waste of those two gloves, by the way. They were disposable, but still.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, thank you for listening to American Family Radio. We, as I've said several times here, we understand and appreciate, and we talk about the seriousness of the situation facing our country and our world, quite frankly, but we're focused on the USA, but you can't lose completely your sense of humor, your outlook on life, let it turn grim and dim and dark. We don't want to do that.
Right.
It's already hard enough. Being cooped up in the house all day, as they say. But with spring here, at least we can get out and walk around,
do some
things without freezing. Steve Jordahl is with us. Steve, good morning.
Good morning, everybody.
Hey, Steve, I know we got many stories to talk about with you, several, the ones that we can get to.
Yep.
But first of all, we have as our guest Philip Gunn, who is the Speaker of the House for the legislature in Mississippi, and he joins us now. I wanted to ask him a few questions. Philip, are you there?
Yes, sir. Good morning. Thanks for having me on today. Appreciate your time.
Good morning. Where's home for you?
I live in Clinton, Mississippi.
Okay, that's the Jackson area.
It is. I'm one of those fortunate legislators who lives within a reasonable driving distance of the Capitol. I get to go home every night.
So how long have you been Speaker of the House?
This is my ninth year.
Let me ask you this. What are the numbers in the Magnolia State right now?
Regarding coronavirus?
Yes. Do you know that?
Yes. As of this morning, we had 485 reported cases. Unfortunately, we've had 5 deaths. All of those deaths were in individuals 60 years of age or older.
What is the role, like your job as Speaker of the House, obviously, is to oversee the works of the legislature, at least the House side. What role is there for a state legislature? We hear a lot about governors across the country, but what role or roles are there for a state legislature in a crisis like this?
Well, the first thing is to make sure that those who are providing relief and service and the health providers and the emergency management people have what they need. We make sure that there's the dollars there to provide them with what they need to buy, the services that they need to provide. We convene if we have to. Now, currently, we're in a unique situation. I guess for the first time in history, we have suspended business, as have most of the legislatures around the country that I know of. We were in the middle of our legislative session. We basically just hit the pause button and, upon the advice of our state health director, went home for a few weeks. We are waiting to decide when we shall return, and when we do, we'll just pick up where we left off. But we are on call, so to speak, and if some need arises for us that we have to immediately go in and try to address some sort of financial problem or crisis, we can do that. right now, we're in a very good shape here in Mississippi. We had probably the best financial shape we've ever been in before this started. So as of today, our emergency management people have all they need in the way of resources. They're attempting to find more test kits, more supplies. They are engaging in more aggressive testing, which is going to reveal more cases. That, as I'm told, is a good thing. We want to identify where this coronavirus is. We want to help those individuals and prevent the spread of it. So by doing more aggressive testing, they can track it better and hopefully treat it better. But as a legislature, we just make sure they have what they need. We also are serving in the role of disseminating information. We are in a point right now where we are daily communicating with the Department of Health and the governor's office, and anything that they need, we're getting that information out there. Many of my House members who are out in the community, obviously spread all around the state, are getting calls from their constituents, calls from the people in the community. Hey, I got a problem. What do I do? Those people call me. I call the appropriate person and try to get that information out as well. I have taken it upon myself to do a daily update, disseminate a written update each day, which is put out over the internet. Many of my House members take that and post it to their Facebook pages and whatnot. And also doing a video update each day, which is found on my Facebook page and being pushed out. And a lot of people said they have appreciated that. So that's kind of a quick overview.
Other than that, you got a lot of free time to sit around the house and watch old baseball games from the 70s, right?
Well, I've told people that my health is more in danger from my wife than it is with coronavirus. I have cleaned out the garage. I have painted the dining room. I have planted 30 plants in the yard.
You're making me tired. You're making me tired just listening to you.
Oh man,
I can't wait to get back to the Capitol and meet the legislators again.
Talking to Philip Gunn, who's the Speaker of the House in Mississippi, and getting an idea sent from him. State legislators all across the country are having to deal with this issue too. Some of them are not being able to meet in their respective state legislatures because of the coronavirus. Steve, did you have a question?
Let me make one more
point,
sir. Real quick too. I have been in communication with my colleagues in other states. Speakers kind of have a close relationship with one another, and I'm good friends with the Speaker in Alabama, the Speaker in Tennessee, Speaker in Georgia, Speaker in North Carolina. We have been talking to each other about once a week, you know, what's going on in your state, how are y'all doing, what are you doing, is there anything you're doing that we could do, and we try to share ideas. So that's another value of knowing people in other states, is we can kind of see what's going on. I will say, from what I've seen in other states, Mississippi, we're doing a pretty good job of staying on top of it. Many other states are having a much more severe outbreak than we've had thus far.
Steve, did you have a question for Speaker Gunn?
I do. Hey, Mr. Speaker, Steve Jordahl here. You may have heard or seen last night MSNBC, Rachel Maddow kind of went after Governor Reeves, saying he doesn't care about the people of Mississippi because the governor is refusing to put a stay in place order throughout the whole state and mandate that. Do you have any response to what Ms. Maddow said?
We're monitoring that on a daily basis. We are trying to make sure that we are doing, first and foremost, what is in the best interest of the public health. Secondly, trying to monitor the economic impact of all this as well. I will tell you that the people of Mississippi want to work. They are working. They want to be out doing their daily routines as much as possible. But at the same time, we recognize the unique situation we find ourselves in and don't want to jeopardize the public health. We are staying in close communications with our public health officer. At this point, we have not felt that a statewide shelter-in-place order is necessary. Now, that could change today. That could change tomorrow. It could change next week. There has been some consideration given to shelter-in-place orders in particular places of the state where there may be a particular outbreak. I will tell you that Mississippi down in the southwest edge of our state, we border New Orleans. And as you know, Louisiana has had a tremendous problem with this. We have seen some activity, I guess the best way to describe it is the most activity we probably have seen is down near the New Orleans area along the Mississippi Gulf Coast. And we've also had a hotbed of activity north Mississippi near Memphis, which is we border Memphis up there, and they've had a time of it.
Yeah.
At this point, as we talk right here today, there's no shelter-in-place order anywhere, but I think it's not something we're ignoring, not something that we're disregarding. We just want to make sure that we don't overreact, and as long as we can keep it under control, then we would love for people to continue their normal activities as much as possible. Yeah. So,
I assume I'm sorry, Speaker. I assume you have. I assume you have an issue, or you disagree with the contention that Governor Reeves does not care about the people of Mississippi.
Well, that's right. I'll answer for Speaker Gunn. Rachel Maddow's a nut.
There you go.
Okay, and that's the answer to that one.
I just wanted to.
And she hates Christians, and she hates conservatives, and she's unpatriotic. Now, other than that, she's probably a pretty good person to have dinner with. I don't know, but hey, Speaker Gunn, thank you for your time, my friend. We appreciate your concern for the state and for the people, you know, all Americans you express concern for.
Thank you so much. All right. Appreciate you letting me come on your show today, and appreciate what you guys did to take care of the Christian cause. Thank you so much.
Thank you, brother. Appreciate it. Talking to Philip Gunn, who's the Speaker of the House in Mississippi, he was basically what he was saying was happening in the Magnolia State, but also, as he said, we hear a lot about Congress, hear a lot about governors,
right.
But state, your House of Representative and your Senate members in your state also have to be on top of this.
Right.
And very involved in this. You're listening to the radio program Today's Issues on American Family Radio. Thank you for listening. If you'd like to send us an email, Rachel, if you're listening, you can go to comments@afr.net. Comments@afr.net is our email address here. Steve, what do you got?
Texas is one of many states who in the face of this pandemic and to kind of keep medical workers free of distractions or of work that's not related to COVID-19, Texas has said that they are going to ban any elective surgeries. That includes abortion, according to Texas. Planned Parenthood and other pro-death groups are suing the governor and others in Texas over that, but they say that's an elective surgery, and we don't need to be doing elective surgeries right now.
Yeah, there's other states that have, I wish I had the list in front of me here, who have also closed down abortion clinics, abortion mills because of this reason.
Yeah, did Louisiana do that,
Louisiana, Ohio.
Yeah.
Some other states.
Well, listen, you know that the, as Steve correctly identified them, the pro-death organizations that exist in this country, they're not going to sit still for those kinds of executive orders or laws.
Those are elective surgeries, quote surgeries. I mean, that if you call a surgery, I don't mean that to legitimize it in any way.
Because right.
when your surgery involves ripping arms and legs off an unborn baby
right.
and sucking them out of the, I'm sorry to be so graphic, folks, but that's what abortion
is.
So that's why people oppose it so vehemently, because it's a brutal procedure. But it's something you choose to do, not something that you have to do to sustain your life,
right.
for example. Next story, Steve.
Again, from the medical front, I'm reading of hospitals around the country, executives of hospitals around the country, considering whether a blanket do not resuscitate order should be issued for any coronavirus patients whose heart stops during their treatment, that they are not going to try to revive them. They say that they want to do this to save the health of the first responders that have to go to the room and get in very close contact with this person who is obviously very sick with the disease. But that, to me, if that was my my mom or dad on the table, I would certainly want them to try everything to resuscitate.
Yeah, this is one of those things. We've talked about this a little bit around in some of our story meetings, that eventually courts are going to be handling a lot of these kinds of cases, because this isn't the only thing that's being considered. I know in Italy and other places, they're talking about, well, if there are older people who have the coronavirus, we're just not going to put them on ventilators. The ventilators are going to be for younger people. That kind of thing is illegal in this country. You can't discriminate on the basis of age. And this particular thing which you're talking about, Steve, looking at an article about this issue, this is going to be one of those things where I'm not sure. What I'm saying is there will be lawsuits if hospitals decide not to, without having a prior written legal statement from a patient, which is the only ones you're supposed to not try to resuscitate. If they say, I have a do not resuscitate. So
what does that mean, Zach? Excuse me for interrupting you, but I hear that, do not resuscitate. Does that mean who decides? You mean somebody is at a life and death moment?
Well, somebody who's coded. Their heart is stopped. Then the hospital teams come in. They try to revive. They use the
A lot of people have that. I don't want to be the people. A lot of people have that in their will or something.
Right.
Don't they?
But they have an official legal document that says, I don't want that to happen. But what the hospitals are saying, and listen, I understand what they're saying. I don't know. Do hospitals give mouth to mouth with someone who codes? Do they do that, or they just use the paddles? I don't know what the procedures are. I know what I see on television, but I don't know if, like, nurses run in and give mouth-to-mouth to someone to try to get them breathing. I can see why nurses or any kind of medical staff is not going to want to do that with someone who has the coronavirus. On the other hand, if a hospital makes the decision not to resuscitate somebody who does not have a legal document saying don't resuscitate, they're going to get sued.
That's what I mean by society breaking down.
Yeah, right. Huh? Yeah.
Just the hospitals do have
potentially
equipment that will allow them to do mouth-to-mouth without having any exchange of fluid. It's a one-way valve and a...
Okay, all right.
They have a way of doing it.
Yeah, that is still available.
It's a valid question, valid point.
But, I mean... A million questions come up if this thing continues to prolong
Point about society breaking down, we talked about...
And I didn't say society's breaking down now.
Right.
And I'm not predicting that. I'm not a doomsayer. I'm just saying what we are all thinking in the back of our minds is you can't go on with dysfunction
right.
for more than a few weeks, you will begin to see societal breakdown. And that's my view.
That's human nature.
Yeah.
And we talked about in the previous segment about stores like Sam's and Costco's having a senior hour for older people to come in and shop first. Well, if supplies begin to get low, you're going to see people saying, no, why should we let the old people go? You see what I'm saying?
Yes.
Human nature can turn very, very ugly. And that's why the only reason I'm saying this is for those people who flippantly criticize the president when he said, I want to get America back to work and get us back. They flippantly criticize him as if he does not care about coronavirus patients.
He only cares about his hotels.
That's right. He's also balancing the fact that he understands what human nature is like, too. And if you try to say 3 months, 6 months of this, that ain't going to wash. And the president understands that, and he's trying to balance
these kinds of issues. I'll tell you another thing, in my view, is that if you go on much longer than maybe 3 more weeks, maybe, and again, this is an opinion, folks, and I could be wrong, okay? I'm not often wrong, though.
Right.
I'm just kidding.
Right.
I was wrong about that because I am often wrong. You see where I'm going with this, Ed?
Not really.
Okay. I just want to make sure I'm confusing everybody. And that is that you can't go on like this because people will begin to say disregard the, you know, they'll disregard the health. They'll say, okay, I'm going to chance it. Why?
Yeah.
Because we've got to get back to work or we're all going to die of starvation.
Right.
and we're going to be in bread lines like the Great Depression. We want that.
Right.
Somebody told me, you know, during the break, said 3 million people lost their jobs last week.
Yeah.
Well, we're watching the coronavirus cases, and we're watching, sadly, how many people pass away. Well, you can't have millions of people continue to lose their jobs, or you will have malaise.
Right.
Right? Both, you'll have more people in the hospital because they OD on drugs.
Right.
Or they commit, sadly commit suicide or go into depression and opioids continue.
There's,
I mean, you know what I'm saying?
There's a health cost for that.
Oh, yeah, absolutely there is. So we can't, you know, we can't continue. I commend the president for saying, hey, he hopes.
Right. Yes.
He didn't say, that's what these left-wing media types and these social commentators who hate President Trump, you know, they're distorting his words. He says something. He says, I hope. They say, and then they'll write an article on a website that says, Trump says, open by Easter, experts say he's insane.
Right.
And all he said was, I hope we can do this. We need to get back to work, because
right.
at least in part of our country, for the reasons I just mentioned. That is a perfectly plausible, and by the way, I want my president to be encouraging.
Yes.
And I don't want my president to be despondent and hopeless and say, I don't know, you tell me.
That's contagious too.
Huh?
That's contagious
too. What kind of leader of a country
right.
does that? Yes, it's his job to be realistic. And he is being realistic. That's why he's done what he's done so far. But you can't, you know, you can't, you got to give somebody hope, that
right.
something to look forward to. And so I don't fault him in any way on this. And the naysayers, they just hate him because they don't want him to be reelected.
Right.
They want him out. So they hate him. They'll distort anything he says. Now, is he wrong sometimes in the way he words things? Yes, he is. But oftentimes, and I heard Brent Hume talk about this, he's never seen anything like this before, where because President Trump says something, the media and the haters, they take the worst possible interpretation
yes.
of what he said.
And assign dark motives
to that.
To it, yeah.
So because that, all they want to do is, their goal is to damage him in the minds of the voters,
right?
Or his support, or and his base is pretty secure. They know what's going on here. But those independent voters, those swing
yeah.
voters, those people who, you know, they'll stay. They're wanting to damage his reputation, that is President Trump's, and his presidency, so they can defeat him.
Yeah.
So if they have to lie, misrepresent, tell half truths, it's like what they did with Dan Patrick, the lieutenant governor of Texas.
Right. Completely you know, misrepresented
yeah,
what he
all
said.
All he said was on Tucker Carlson's show the other day, he said, I'm willing to take a chance at my health going forward if it means keeping the country from completely collapsing on my children and my grandchildren.
Right.
That's what he said. Well, that was by the media goes out, not all of them, they go out and say, Dan Patrick says seniors ought to just die for the cause, for the economy, for the stock market.
Right.
See, anyway, this doesn't really bother me. I just act like it does. No, it's just, like you said, Ed, I don't believe these left-wing media and politicians anymore at all.
I don't either. And they did that.
They caused...
The fact yeah. that I don't trust them.
Right. It's completely and totally unfair in so many ways. You want to disagree with somebody like the president? Let's at least be factual about what you're disagreeing on. Thank you, Steve, for your 17 words.
It's my privilege to do what I can.
All right. See you tomorrow. Trivia Friday tomorrow, everybody.